Well, it's extraordinary, isn't it, that 800 years after this event, we're here and the Queen is here. Because, you know, it was actually the greatest humiliation in the history of the monarchy, apart from the execution of Charles I. And Magna Carta itself, that thing that was sealed 800 years ago, was a complete failure. It was intended to end a civil war between the king and the barons, and it led not only to its renewal, but actually to a French invasion. And yet, here we are.
Should we then mark it a year later? Are we marking the wrong anniversary, do you think?
I think we're marking, in one sense, the wrong anniversary. The real Magna Carta, the Magna Carta that is the beginning of our modern political system, you know, what happened in the general election a week or two ago actually does begin with the various Magna Cartas. It's the Magna Carta of 1216, because a year later, the situation was very different. King John was dead. His little innocent son was on the throne, who'd just been crowned. And, you know, it's a bit like Princess Charlotte and Prince George. The sight of a little royal lad melts hearts. There was a real French invasion. Prince Louis was invading England. And there was a brilliant, intelligent regent, a man called William the Marshal, who is a kind of Tory prime minister, unusually with brains. And what he does, he reissues Magna Carta, but he leaves out all the bad bits. The Magna Carta of 1216, which is the Magna Carta we are really celebrating, is only two-thirds of the length of the Magna Carta of 1215. You leave out everything that's Russell Brand-esque, that's revolutionary, that's republican. You leave out all the difficult things about the Jews and taxation and forest law. And instead, you come up with a classic English compromise. Nobody quite gets what they want. Everybody's got to give up a little bit, but everybody gets something. The bishops get something, the barons get something, the king gets something, the common lawyers get something, the churchmen get something. You know, that's how you do politics. You, me, and the rest of us in the media, we've been rubbishing politics now for years. But you know, there's a single choice. If we don't have politics, we have war. We have civil war. Here, we learn to do something better. We learn about compromise.
Without the Magna Carta, what do you think our political and our legal system would look like today?
It's inconceivable. I think if the Magna Carta of 1215 had been made to stick, we wouldn't have a monarchy. We would have had a chaotic, anarchic republic, a bit like Poland. And the importance of those years of the 13th century really is that they make England, that they lay the foundation of the English parliamentary system, into which, of course, Scotland and the rest of the British Isles were eventually slotted, though how much longer they will remain part of that is another matter.
Well, indeed, and you bring up Scotland. You were in the papers at the weekend, weren't you, talking a lot about Scotland. You made some comparisons between the SNP and Nazis. Let me just remind our viewers who may not have had a chance to see the article some of the quotes. What are the points of comparison? You say, well, we have a political movement that has a single historic explanation for why your country is facing such terrible oppression. It's either Versailles or the Treaty of Union. You have a particular group of people who are responsible for this. It is either the English or the Jews. Going on to say, you have a symbol, the twisted cross, the saltire or the swastika. You have a passionate belief in economic self-sufficiency known by the Nazis as autarky and the Scots as oil. And you also have the propensity of your elderly and middle-aged male supporters to expose their knees. It's created a great deal of offence to many people in Scotland. Are you sorry for the offence it's caused?
No, of course not. We have this awful, idiotic PC politics. What we've got to recognise, I said nothing about Scotland. I said a great deal about the SNP. The SNP is a virulently nationalist party of a type that we have not had in Britain. It models itself on the continental extreme nationalist movements of the 1930s. That's when it's founded. It's time we call things by their proper names. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not saying they're about to set up concentration camps. I'm not going to say that we're going to see a Kristallnacht of English businesses in Edinburgh. Of course we're not. But the resemblances are striking and are worrying. Now, we've spent years fussing in Britain about completely minor fringe things like the BNP and whatever. They are nothing compared with the Scottish Nationalist Party, which has seized control of a whole country and is pushing this kind of radical agenda. They talk about civic nationalism. The word civic is merely a fig leaf, or perhaps bearing in mind that it's Scotland, a jockstrap.
You say they seized control, 50% of the population voted for them.
Yes, of course. But, sorry, lots of people have voted for very unpleasant leaders. I shan't mention the word Hitler. I mean, democracy doesn't always get it right.
But comparing the saltire to the swastika, that's not the SNP symbol of saltire. It's the symbol of Scotland. It's the national symbol.
Sorry? The saltire, of
the
course
saltire
it is.
Isn't the but SNP been, symbol,
but
is
been,
it?
But it's been. But the saltire is, of course, a national symbol. It's the flag of St Andrew. I do know these things. But it has been appropriated by the SNP in a very particular way. Look at those scenes in Glasgow at the time of the independence vote. And listen, listen to the cybernats if you disbelieve me.
Can I ask your opinion while we have you here about Sir Tim Hunt? He's, of course, the Nobel Prize winner who made some comments last week about women. Boris Johnson says he's been hung out to dry by the academic community. Do you think a lot of academics are perhaps a little afraid to speak their mind? You're clearly not afraid to speak your mind and you say what you think, but how do you think Mr. Hunt's been treated?
I think the real problem now, of course, is that in theory, academic communities should be about freedom of speech. Remember, as was pointed out by Voltaire in the 18th century, and again by John Stuart Mill in the 19th century, only freedom of speech, only dissent, only disagreeing. These are the conditions of all human progress. The trouble is, universities are now being taken over by very definite forms of political correctness. I mean, I think that what Tim Collins said about women was in one sense silly, though it was also modest, deprecating, if you like. Remember those wonderful words about King Lear, a fond, foolish old man. But this man is a brilliant scientist. He is a Nobel Prize winner. Now, there are not many Nobel Prize winners. And simply to defenestrate him, to throw him through the window because he's made the odd, incautious remark, seems to me to display the weirdest sense of values. If a university isn't about intellectual quality, isn't about intellectual distinction, it really is time we shut up shop with the lot of them. Universities are not about furthering minorities. They're not about furthering special interests. They should purely be about the mind and the quality of the mind.
Women in science aren't a minority, though, are they? Sorry, I don't know if you heard me, sir. Women in science, you can't really call them a minority. I mean, yeah, there are fewer of them, but they aren't a minority, are they?
Sorry, I think, in fact, that exactly the complaint that was being made was that women are a minority in science. There are some immensely distinguished women. There are immensely distinguished women throughout academic life, you know, Marie Curie in science. My entire upbringing was conditioned by strong, magnificent, able women. My headmistress, the sister of the outpatient department who nursed me back to health after I'd been operated on for club feet. All of these women made me. But none of these women campaigned for special rights. They all made their mark because they were tough, they were intelligent, they were determined, they were as good or better than any man. And this is the way we should compete. This is the way we should compete, simply on level playing fields by quality. There should be no special privileges. You know, I am not a public school boy. I had no privilege. This business of counting privilege. I was born in a council estate, right? You know, all of that. I have simply risen, as so many of my generation did, through quality, through competition. And that's the way we proceed, not by whinging, victimhood, and special pleading.